There's rebellion in the wind.
A new world order. A new world order.
How can you have a house without a gun?
Guns are toys. They're for family protection, hunting dangerous or delicious animals, keeping the King of England out of your face.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. Is the problem.
Here's a hint for you geniuses out there.
Avenge me!
All for nothing if you don't have freedom.
It's all that cheese they eat. Seems like every other day somebody's rolling a 50-pound cheese wheel.
Put out all points bulletins. We'll set up roadblocks everywhere.
A new world order. A new world order. A new
attention.
World order. A new world order.
Attention.
The government is
an emergency. Repeat. An emergency.
I'm not going to stand for this. I'm going to call the newspapers, the TV stations, the gas stations, everybody.
Heavens, what kind of radio show is this?
Sit back down and shut your trap. It's time for
facts. Jones.
Radio.
And now for something completely different.
Greetings and salutations. This is the Dutch Jones radio program. Can I hear myself? Yes. I listened to my show the other day and I'm eating the mic again. So I'm going to... Hey, what's with the music there? What are you doing? Are you doing that or is it doing it itself? It's a glitch in the song. Okay, let me bring up Lou's Mikey Mike. We're here live. This is the Dutch Jones radio program on a Everybody Gets the Day Off But Dutch and Us Folks Day. It is July 5th, 2010, the day after I Hate England Day, otherwise known as Independence Day, Firecracker Day for the pagans, you know, whatever they want to call it. And, well, thank you, everyone, telling me it sounds okay and telling me we're getting out. I see PennDOT and Olima. Our regulars and official show supporters and part of the staff, actually. They sent me information. We got some guests in there today. Boy, I just want to welcome you to the show. We had a great 3 days off. I mean, other than me ripping my Achilles tendon, we've had a great couple of days off. We had a great sermon yesterday at the church at Kaweah. Those of you that tuned in and heard it live, thank you very much. Those of you that were helping out, we had the... Christian Independence Patriot Day version of, what is it called, Jeopardy? It was kind of a game
Jerusalem
show thing.
Squares.
Jerusalem Squares, we do that on another day. And people were answering questions from online, too. That was kind of nice. We don't know exactly how many people heard it, but judging by the emails, it was pretty big. It was global. It went out all kinds of... Wow, here we go. Let me get this ready here. Hello, this is Dutch. You're on the air.
Yes, this is Tom.
Oh, hello, Tom. I got word of your call. I was just feeling a little bit till you called in. For the folks who don't know, Tom is involved with the little Arizona project that we were working with, and he asked to call in to release some information that is very pertinent to all of you folks that were getting ready to go out there this weekend. So I'm just going to give you the venue, Paul. It's yours. You talk as long as you want about what you want, and if I have any questions at the end or if anybody posts any questions in the chat room, when you're ready, just let me know. But other than that, welcome to the show, and go ahead, Tom.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. Happy to be here, and not so little. It's actually turning out to be quite a large event.
There you go.
But the operation at Arizona's border, set for July 9th through the 11th, it has been postponed for a future date.
Okay.
The date will be announced soon. There are several organizers working behind the scenes, and... all are in agreement that it is in the best interest to postpone and reschedule the operation. Mm-hmm. Now, volunteers expect a chance to patrol a section of the border that is not secure. They want action. They don't want, you know, just to be sitting side saddle to border patrol or, you know, government agency.
Right.
But... they want to get out there for a chance to do something. They expect volunteers around them to be safe and lawful. They expect all issues concerning logistics to be handled by the organizers.
Yes.
Volunteers, you know, they usually appreciate local support. All this is what you can expect from us, from the organizers of this event. And by us, I'm not trying to say that it's my doing or a select few. This really is inclusive. It's everyone. We're calling on militias and independent patriots to come forward, and our hopes, our desires were to see larger groups of people patrolling
sure.
the border. right. Whether it be in Arizona, California, anywhere on that southern border, and we will achieve this goal. Now, all those concerns, none of these issues played a part or a role in the postponement of the operation. We will unite as a coalition of patriots in an inclusive, large-scale operation in the near future. We will keep close contact with everyone who has volunteered and release the scheduled date for the operation soon, as I stated. If you don't mind, I wanted to go over. Like I said, it's not canceled. It is postponed.
Okay.
It is for good reason. I'm not getting into that at this time, if that's all right with you. But
no, that's fine.
I did want to actually talk about our objectives.
That would be great. And that's good. I love the fact that you're saying that it is postponed. I've been involved with many of these events from 92 on, and I've been to just as many terrible ones with good intentions as I've been to excellent ones. And the big difference in all of it has always been planning, everything coming together at the pre-planned time. So I can completely understand why you would – it's a wiser decision to postpone something rather than to go ahead when you don't have everything set up just right. So I admire that. I'm glad you made that decision. I would have much rather you do that than all of our folks show up out there and there may be little issues or big issues. So I think that's a great idea that you guys decided to postpone it. So I will continue to support the show from the show here. Anything you need, and I apologize for calling it a little operation. I meant that more facetiously than
No. I'll tell you, it really did grow into something great, and we're really happy. We're really appreciative of all the volunteers, you know, the organizers. We saw the signs. There are, to our knowledge, 14 signs that went up between Maricopa all the way to Nogales. So we're not talking about a great deal of signs. Of course, it was featured in Fox News.
Yeah, we saw
it. But our greatest concern is what a lot of people don't know is that actually portions of the park have been closed for some years.
Yeah.
They just introduced these signs, but the actual closures, to our knowledge and understanding, they've been there. They've been in effect, and we really have lost American soil. I really feel like this, and for the past couple of 4th of July, they're really dampened by the fact that we're losing American soil to these gangs and cartels.
Right.
And the violence, I mean, you know, of course, you know, you had the rancher murdered recently in Arizona. And I know a lot of locals on the border. I live in California.
Okay.
I go to the border all the time. You will see me at the border quite often. We go with small or somewhat larger groups. I have friends that live virtually on the border. Both in Arizona and California. I like to get around, you know. I like to see what's out there and what the border's like in other areas, not just here in California. But let me make it clear that the planning and organizing, although as large as it has become, we have a great number of volunteers that are here to serve, organizers that are here to serve the volunteers. We're here to serve. This is not a one-man show.
No.
This is not for any one militia or any one group of people to take credit. We are simply asking Americans to stand up as Americans and get out to the border. Imagine, if you will, everyone that lives in Southern California. I mean, I'm talking about California because I live here. Now imagine we send locals or everyone that complains about the issue.
It actually shows up.
Set up. Showed up to the border, we would shut it down. The citizens could shut it down. And another reason I talk about California is although Arizona's in the news, there's a lot of horrible desert. Was it the Sonora Desert and whatnot?
Yeah.
I mean, could you imagine going, you know, walking through that for about 6 days? More drugs come through there, I think, than people. Whereas, you know, in California, we still have the drugs, but I mean, you see trails,
right.
You see large amounts of trash.
Yeah, when you get up in an aircraft and you see the trails that leave from, you know, the border that go all the way to San Jacinto, Moreno Valley, these trails continue for just miles.
Exactly. I mean, it's unbelievable. And of course, you know, they have the border checkpoints, but what we often see is these vehicles will stop, roads or people will leave the vehicle. and the vehicles, you know, stop a couple miles after the checkpoint and reload, or the people jump in. So, you know, our Border Patrol is underfunded, undermanned.
And one might even argue that they're underutilized,
but
too.
I wanted to say, though, it's not so much the organizing. We have a great number of people, a good number of people, including locals, that are here to serve. Mm-hmm. And it's not so much the organizing. It's just unforeseen circumstances that I just do not wish to get into. But it's better to hold off and have a successful event.
Yeah.
And to just jump in there. Now, don't get me wrong. I go to the border all the time. We'll go with two guys, me and another guy, or you know, a handful or several of us. And you can get out there, talk to locals, and play it by ear. But for an event on this scale, what we've decided to do is just hold off and make sure that it's a successful event.
That's great.
And, you know, some of our objectives have changed because it is growing. It continues to grow. It's such a large-scale operation that we're able to achieve, I believe, more objectives, and so we set more objectives for the operation.
Sure.
And where we're going to actually establish a base camp and med tent. We actually have a doctor and EMTs and people training and supplies that are willing to donate their services. And that would be set up at the base camp. Two, we want to secure and protect the perimeter of the base camp and med tent. We're going to establish LPs, organized patrols and posts on the border, observe and report any and all illegal activity, disrupt and stop all drugs and illegals. These are Mexican citizens from entering our nation illegally. To locate the position of spotters who work on the north side of the border and provide the cartels with intel on the position of the authorities and us.
Yeah.
You know, they have the equipment. They have the infrared and the night vision, and they have the equipment. And in fact, in some hills of Arizona, they even have snipers.
Right.
And so it's very dangerous, and you have to know what you're doing. You got to work with locals, and even work, you know, you got to use everyone around you, including locals and whatever intel you can get from authorities to make sure it's a safe event. Now we want to locate and expose landing strips for ultralight aircraft that's used to smuggle drugs.
Yeah.
And a lot of people think that that's something out of a sci-fi movie when you or from an action movie when you explain to them how these drugs are smuggled in, but no, this is very, very real. You know, they're actually not entirely hard to find because, you know, terrain and, of course, vegetation, they're limited to where they can use these aircrafts. Now, of course, we want to locate and expose the camps used by the coyotes, the mules, the drug cartels. And of course, the main goal, I'd say, after all that's done, I mean, we want to work as a force multiplier. We want to familiarize militia and the patriots to the tactics and the terrain so that they can schedule future operations at the southern border independently.
Yeah.
You know, this is not about us. This is not an organized group,
right.
As many people come to know the Minutemen and
well, and I
other
think
organizations,
having been through the...
We're calling on all these organizations to help out
right.
with this large scale, and for those that aren't used to patrolling the border and that want to be involved, this is a chance for us to work as a force multiplier and teach them, let them introduce them to our local contacts, introduce them to the people, show them our tactics, and let them take it on their own with their groups.
Well, the key thing is, and you said something there that I really liked about, this is not a large group organizational thing. This is it can, like you said in the beginning, one to two guys, 10 guys, a dozen guys. And I think that's what the answer is, because I've been involved with all the groups, everything from just vigilante ranchers to ranch rescue to the Minuteman Project. All these groups I've been involved in, even in just a small part or a big part. And the one thing that always works the best is just like the group, the Campo Minutemen. I really like, you just show up when you can, you get out there, you get things done, and I like that. And I can assume that you're not going to be running for U.S. Senator anytime soon.
No, absolutely
not. Yeah. Sometimes they try to use it as a
vehicle. Not even my real name.
Yeah, same here. Yeah, Dutch Jones. There is no Dutch
Jones. No, I'll tell you, I have no interest in politics. Yeah. I'm too honest. I'll tell you, I'm really interested in politics, and I've learned enough about it to know not to get involved.
Right, right.
I'll tell you what, when it comes to that, even if you have someone honest, it's funny how Washington can change them. And then you go back to the people who vote, of course, politicians are liars, thieves, and crooks, except for my guy. You know, all politicians are liars, thieves, and crooks, except for my guy I'm voting for, you know.
Right.
What we're looking to do is also set a standard as to how patriots are to conduct border operations. Now, you talk about the Campo Minutemen. I don't know. Did you ever meet Ridge Runner?
Yes, Ridge Runner, all of them. You know,
Mad Max was out there for a while. Now, Ridge Runner was actually an original tumbleweed.
Yes.
Good man. Good man right there.
Yeah, that guy can do things with an old motorcycle I've never seen anybody able to do. He was amazing.
I remember when he first brought that in.
Yeah.
See, what they do is amazing. But we're talking about more of a large-scale operation, and we kind of want to set the standard for how future large-scale operations can be, how we can actually meet the objectives and in a lawful manner.
Yeah.
And, of course, I don't want people to think that we're going out there, these vigilantes, that are actually acting chaotically and shooting off weapons and acting worse than the smugglers. You know, we're not out there to be part of the problem. We're there to be part of the solution. And, we do want to, set a standard for large-scale operations. Now, those small-scale operations, like you said, Campo, San Diego, these guys actually small-scale, but they kept it going. Campo has, I think, over the years, I'll tell you, they've really, really shown, they've set the bar themselves.
Yeah, well, Kingfish is the de facto leader. I mean, they don't like to say they have a leader because they're all independents. But, he really set the standard when he said, we're going to be shore watchers, we're going to hide, we're going to we're going to use the radio, we're going to use everything we can and just work right next to the Border Patrol. And they spent a lot of time working out a great working relationship with the Border Patrol. And then you've got the, the Border Patrol Auxiliary now that's a new, well, it's not new, but it's coming up. And they went the other way, much more regimented, much more organized, but the same way. They're really filling a small hole down there that was needed for the Border Patrol, and it's working out well.
For people that have not been to Campo, let me explain. You actually have, I guess you would call it a border fence.
Yeah.
I believe it was made out of helicopters, the landing strips.
Runway material,
back in Vietnam, the metal. And they stop. It actually stops when it hit when they meet a rock. When this fence meets a rock, it stops. There's holes in it. Then it ends in some places. Or some places it's so low you can just jump over it. And these guys are working in an area known for violence. There was a Border Patrol officer that was shot there about a year back. But there's far more violence than you actually hear about in the news.
Sure. Oh yeah.
Lots of drugs coming through, and there's always wild stories coming from there, and they're all true. They're not these fantasy fairy tales. This is really the reality of the border, and you really get
even yesterday.
They're doing a great job. Another thing I really like and I really appreciate are the locals.
Yeah.
I just got back from Arizona, and I was with for a small period of time a local. It's just him and his dog.
Yeah.
And they go out and they report to Border Patrol.
Yeah.
And they'll follow or they'll track. And you got to be careful tracking because these cartels and the mules, they're using military tactics.
They'll double back.
Where they ambush. You're tracking them and they ambush you. And that's what happened to the sheriff. I believe it was the sheriff out in Arizona not too long ago. I think it seems like a month ago.
Yeah,
so you really have to be careful. But this gentleman, I had a great time with him. Because of course I was with locals to help organize this event coming up, this operation, and I'll tell you, this gentleman, him and his dog, they get out there, and he does he does the job on his own, and it is great to see. Really exciting because you repeatedly see these gentlemen or these families. You know, I here locally in California, I know mm-hmm. this gentleman and his son. They go out and they provide great information, great intel, and they're out there doing the job the government really refuses to do. I mean, our Border Patrol is underfunded, undermanned, and I mean, you see how they treat Arizona. I mean, what you have is they simply pass a law that says that they're going to enforce federal laws, mm-hmm. and the federal government has a problem with it. It's unbelievable, but you know, that's when we the people need to take a stand.
Well, I just want to
say enough is enough and move forward.
Tim, let me jump in here. For people that are just jumping in and listening, we got people IMing us. This is Tim from the Coalition of Patriots 1776 that were, and if I get the organization wrong, you correct me when I'm done, but he's calling in to let us know that the operation this weekend has been postponed. Then it'll be a TBA to be announced. It's been postponed, not for anything major. They just realized that they needed to push it back a while and figure out, you know, how to get everything together. And they said, you know, just maybe fine tune it a little bit. Everything's there. The response is there. The volunteers are there. Everything's going great. So don't panic or anything. It's just they're going to postpone it a little bit.
Everything's moving forward. We're real pleased.
Yeah.
With how things are moving forward. And if anything, this actually gives us a chance to collect more volunteers.
That's true.
And we really envision this a truly successful event. Like you said, we've probably both been to these operations and the best intentions, but well, it was, you know, you definitely wish that there's better planning.
Yeah.
The postponement has nothing to do with planning.
Right.
As I stated earlier, that, you know, what people want is a chance to be at an unprotected part of the border. You know, they want all logistics to be handled ahead of time by the organizers. They need locals there to help them with the lay of the land and intel and whatnot. And you can expect this, and none of that played a part in the postponement, and it is just that postponed.
So we'll just tell people to keep tuning here and watch for the emails. And we'll send out the emails again. It's coalition_of_patriots1776@hotmail.com. And if you don't catch that, just email me at the Dutch Jones Show, and I'll forward the information to you. Keep listening here. We'll make sure you hear it. But we've got that out. Let's talk a little bit more about your SOP and your rules of engagement now. You and I, you obviously have been down on the border. You know that a lot of the stuff that happens doesn't get out. And people have, on both sides of it, have approached me and said, well, I'd like to go, but I don't want to get shot at. And then other people said, you know, oh, I'd like to go, but only if there's going to be action. Can you give us the fair to Midland report of what's really going to happen and what, under the guidance of this operation, what the rules of engagement are to be followed and what they might expect? And I know you can't see into the future, but I've got people on both extremes emailing me wanting to know.
Well, for security, you have to be a little careful. But I'll tell you what, those that are worried about being shot at, maybe the border is not the place for you. Now,
okay.
Understand that we're going to have a camp, a base camp, that's going to be separate from the patrols and the further posts that where those people will be in more danger. And, you know, we're going to ask that those with more training help us out with those. Now, just because you're worried about being shot at doesn't necessarily mean you shouldn't come.
Right.
Now, keep in mind, there's supporting roles to be played, whether at camp or with the med team. There are other roles to be played. You have to understand, I'm just one of several organizers. If you've read the emails,
mm-hmm.
I wrote the emails.
Yeah.
But we actually have another gentleman who you know that you've been in contact with that answers the questions.
Sure.
And we all work as a team. This is not a one-man show. This is not a one-man effort. You asked if I was going to be running for office, and absolutely not. This is not a one-man show, one-man team. But I'm going to try to answer this to the best of my ability. Now, if you're worried about being shot at, well, yeah, I'll tell you, you got a lot to live for, and you must have a job in this poor economy. I'll tell you what. If you're that worried, we don't want people that are going to crack under pressure anyways.
Right.
You don't know what to expect.
Yeah.
We go to areas that we know are ports of entry and that are not exactly safe.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as far as rules of engagement, our job is to observe and report.
Not engage.
And I'm sure you've heard that many times. We're not taking the law into our own hands. We're not actual vigilantes here. But I'll tell you what, we want to disrupt and we want to stop the drugs from getting onto our streets and into our children's schools.
Sure.
We want to disrupt and stop that traffic.
Well, from a legal standpoint,
get thorn in their side. Now, you understand also, it varies from state to state. Now, we've talked about patrol in California. The laws do vary from state to state, and that's something you need to be aware of, which is also the weapons you can carry, the mags, whole nine yards. I mean, it really is a different world when you travel from state to state. Now, I'll tell you, though, as far as rules of engagement, I'm going to protect my camp.
Right.
I'm going to protect myself. Someone shoots at me, and I feel like my life is in danger, I'm going to protect myself and protect the camp. And I do believe in the Second Amendment. And I'll tell you, you don't go to the border unarmed.
It's ludicrous to even think about doing that.
No, that's a death wish right there. that's insane. You do not go to the border unarmed. And you have to be willing to protect yourself, protect your camp. But you have to go there with a state of mind that you're there to observe and report.
Yeah.
Now, I've been out there several times, and I remember a group coming across, and this is on the California border. And we let our position be known. We called in, and we weren't receiving a quick response. We used locals to call in for us as well, every trick in the book, and it was taking a while, and so we made our presence known. Well, I'll tell you, they were very brazen. They continued their path, and we just simply followed them, stayed north of them to the best of our ability, and just kept giving our location away. Hey, here we are.
Yeah.
This is where they are. And eventually, they're apprehended by authorities. And, if you see drug cartel, if it looks like drug activity, what you really want to do is alert the authorities and keep in mind that you make your presence known. Your life is, of course, in danger. Now, let's not forget that Arizona, once again, we had off the officers that were able to stop a drug shipment, and what happened with them was the police department and the officers received a death threat from the cartel.
Yeah, typical operating procedure for the other side. Well, Tim, I hate to cut you off, but we're coming up on a hard break here. Stay on the line after I get everything switched over. I want to talk to you a little bit just on off the air. And set it up so you can come in on a regular time whenever you like and give us updates so we can get you the volunteers, keep them informed. We'll be back after this break. This is the Dutch Jones Radio Program, and we'll be back after a couple songs and commercials. And keep listening. We'll be right back.
When a strong man shows them the way, give me some men who are stout-hearted men who will fight for the right they adore. Start me with 10 who are stout-hearted men, and I'll soon give you 10,000 more. Shoulder to shoulder and bolder they grow as they go to the fore. Then there's nothing in the world can hold on. Men can
Thank you for listening to the Dutch Jones Radio Program. And if you get nothing else from our show, there should be two things that you learn. One is, you need to work together with other like-minded people. And number two, you need the basic equipment to keep from becoming a refugee. So whether you're looking for a water filter, tactical gear, surplus gear, or just want to look into some new survival equipment, you need to check out djstore.tk. That's djstore.tk. We carry surplus, and we carry new lines from MilSpec and Voodoo Tactical. And if you don't see it on our website, please send us a message, and we'll find it for you. So if you're going to need the gear anyway, why not buy it from us? You'll get it for cheaper than you will from the source, and it'll help out the ministry here at the Dutch Jones Radio Program. So whether you're new or been in this for a while, check out djstore.tk. That's djstore.tk.
I've got a lot of friends that are very terrible people.
There is rebellion in the wind.
A new world order. A new world order.
How can you have a house without a gun?
Guns are toys. They're for family protection, hunting dangerous or delicious animals, keeping the King of England out of your face.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. Is the problem.
Here's a hint for you geniuses out there.
All for nothing if you don't have freedom.
It's all that cheese they eat. Seems like every other day somebody's rolling a 50-pound cheese wheel in.
Put out an all-points bulletin. We'll set up roadblocks everywhere.
A new world order.
A new world order.
A new world order.
Attention.
Government
is the problem. This is
an emergency. Repeat, an emergency.
I'm not going to stand for this. I'm going to call the newspapers, the TV stations, the gas stations, everybody.
Heavens, what kind of radio show is this?
Sit back down and shut
Lou,
your
trap. Lou, are we ready to call in?
It's time for
is it time, Lou? Is it?
Radio.
Oh, my God, I'm not ready.
Enough of something.
I'm not ready, Lou.
Different.
Well, hello and welcome back to Dutch Jones Radio Program. The smooth sound of militia radio. I don't know if you guys could hear me there. I don't know. Could you hear me when I was yelling like that? I don't know. I took my mic down. Anyway, we just got done with Tim, not his real name, and he's not running for office. He's not doing this to make $1 million. And yes, I am taking a swipe at some of the previous Minuteman groups of all different factions. I got nothing worse than I hate it. Joining an organization, putting my blood and sweat into an organization like the Minuteman Project, all this, and then you know, people walk away with money, people infight, and it's just terrible. So this is a good group. We're going to continue to support it, the Coalition of Patriots 1776. If you haven't gotten an email from them yet, you will be getting one shortly. They're just postponing it for a little fine-tuning. My view of it is that I know that there's at least three or four other operations going on the border at the same time, and I'd like to think there just wasn't enough border space. Quite frankly. So if you know someone else that was going, like Rocky Hill, if you know of anybody that was going, it's up to each of us to notify them. I can't do it right now, but I'll be sending out an email after it. We'll do what we can to continue to support this operation. We will continue to support any operation on the border that is a solid operation. Like I said, I do have some bad taste in my mouth from some of the more national groups where guys were just riding them as a vehicle to run for office. And there's nothing wrong with running for office, don't get me wrong, but Lee, you just tore down the Confederate flag.
What?
You just tore down the
Confederate...
Quit defacing. Defacing the Confederate flag.
It's not secured. You didn't secure it.
It was secured enough that it's been up for several days on its own until you leaned on it.
Off with your head.
Off with your head. You're just lucky it didn't hit the ground there, Northern Union supporter boy who defaces the Confederate flag.
It was an accident.
There are no accidents, Lou. When are you going to learn that? There you go, Lou. That's good. Now we should turn the webcam on you, and people should be able to see you and shame you.
Yeah.
let's see. Where were we over the weekend had a really good week, and we did the Church at Cahuilla, TCAC. If I call it TCAC, it's because it's easier than saying the Church at Cahuilla. TCAC sermon from Sunday, which was a patriotic sermon, and went out on U Broadcast. There were a few people on U Broadcast, and it also went over Liberty Tree Radio, UStream. I don't even know all the places it went out. People were recording it. It's not up on the archives yet for the show. We're not going to put it on the show because it was a church thing. I don't expect Olima to do that unless she did it on her own, then God bless her. But if Lou tomorrow we have to go somewhere where there's some good bandwidth, then we'll upload it to the church archives at thechurch@kuia.org. And you spell at, A-T, it's not the symbol, the church at Kuia.
Unlike someone, what? You know who spelled it, the at symbol.
Who did?
You.
When did I do
when
that?
You first got here, remember?
No, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't defame the Confederate flag.
Hey, I didn't...
I don't know why you're even talking. Somebody sent me an email and said that they weren't even sure if Lou was real.
You're just throwing your voice.
They thought I was just doing like a Phil Hendry kind of thing. If you don't know who that is, you need to look it up. And they thought that maybe... Or then somebody said they do enjoy it, and it's like Penn and Teller. Except it's a little more bloody. You're fortunate you can't see the things that end up Lou ends up doing. Today, in a grocery store, I'm walking with a flexible
whatever
cast.
Whatever you're about to say is probably a lie.
And I'm walking, pushing the cart with barely able to walk. He runs up, puts his hand firmly on the back of my head, gazes into my eyes like he's about to kiss me, scares the bejesus out of me. I try to get away, and then he headbutts me for no reason. And then goes, ow! Ow, that hurt! And I'm like, why are you headbutting me? Because I saw it coming, so I tilted my head down, and he hit, you know, my mid-sagittal crest. You know, I look like one of those... cavemen on TV, and he had no idea, so I hit him right between the eyes with it when I saw him coming, and I go, I never taught you how to do a headbutt, why in the world would you do it? He goes, I don't know, it hurts, and he says, I gotta go lay down somewhere, and I don't know what scared me more, the headbutt, or the way he looked into my eyes and grabbed me firmly behind the neck like he was going to kiss me. Olima says that the sermon is already up in the archives, thank you very much. And also, we've the request for the Peter Hammond stuff, that's up on the church. The sermon that he gave that we played just kind of off the cuff is not on our archives because it was just played for, you know, we just played it because it was worth listening to. Because we can. But it's on the church archives. The Peter Hammond stuff is on the church archives. But that sermon went out, and it was a good one. It wasn't the Muhlenberg sermon. We never know what our pastor's going to do. He prays about it, studies. He didn't do the Muhlenberg sermon. But he did an excellent... For this time sermon on our duty to resist tyranny. And it was excellent. It was excellent. And if you didn't hear it, you got to listen to it. Make copies of it. Download it. Hand it out on street corners. Shout the name of the church at Kuia. You know, start. You know, I want you to take a Sharpie and get a white T-shirt and write DutchJones.TK on it. And, you know, write, I listen to DutchJones.TK and I can kick your butt because of it. Or something. Whatever you want to do. Just promote the show. Get these sermons out there. Get these ideals out there. We've got to just grab this nation, I'm going to say by the throat and shake it. That's not what I wanted to say. It just needs to be throttled. This nation needs a good throttling.
Headbutt.
It needs a headbutt. We've got to get out there and headbutt the nation. Just don't gaze into their eyes like that. Well, maybe actually that'll work. You ever grab some stranger like that and it makes it look like you're going to kiss them. I don't know how it's going to end up. You may accidentally get a guy who wants to kiss you back, but... be very careful there. That is to be very, very careful. But the stuff that's going on, I mean, I heard a great sermon today from Coral Ridge Church on some AM station that we picked up while we were eating our lunch or dinner or something. And they were comparing, and I've never heard this on a commercial Christian radio station. That's right, it's a commercial station. They were saying, we are paralleling Nazi Germany. And they went through step by step. They were talking about how homeschooling was banned, how Hitler said that the parents have the bodies of the children, the state shall have the minds. And then they start talking about Hillary saying that, the Board of Education saying it. You know, and it was just amazing.
Well, they love Hitler.
And how much we're following the National Socialist line here in America, just like they did in 1930s Germany. But the difference is, we know what can happen. And I'm not saying we're more sophisticated than them. I'm not taking away the responsibility the German citizens had. Don't get me wrong. But what the church did in Nazi Germany, they're doing the same thing today. Because why? The state is saying, you stay in your own little cubbyhole. We guarantee you that we won't mess with you, but don't mess with us. You know, they were one-third Catholic, two-thirds Protestant, and then, you know, there was some weird Unitarians and stuff hanging out there too. But this nation... we have so many good examples that we could just raise up and show them and say, hey, look what you're doing wrong. Look at you. Oh, I love it. The whole homeschool thing. You know, in Germany, once again, it's illegal to homeschool again. They're going through their cycle again. Some parents just spent 90 days in jail because they refused to allow their child to go to the public cesspool system. And then we heard on the radio today, and this is weird, the government stance is there's no constitutional guarantee in the United States to homeschool your kid. That's what the Hegelian dialect has gotten. They're telling us that we don't have a guarantee from the Constitution. When the Constitution doesn't guarantee us anything, it tells the federal government what to be hands off. So my answer to that would be, well, there's nothing in the Constitution that says the federal government should be handling the education of our children. But yet, so many Christians, and I'm not blaming the people that are not out in the church, the Christians who are supposed to know better are just allowing the federal government to take more and more jurisdiction over their lives. So, I mean, what, Rocky Hill? You just said, hey, DJ. I don't know. That'd be funny. But, man, it was an amazing sermon this Sunday, just trying to get people. Well, of course, our people in our church didn't need it. I mean, there may be one or two that, you know, I don't know all their personal lives. You know, maybe they go home and, you know, and they secretly put on their Obama DVD and watch it and go, ooh, I'm waiting for change. Please. Because there are Christians that are liberals. I don't understand it. It's like, you know, it's like being a child molester who's married. I don't understand. How can you be one and the other, you know? So being a liberal and being a Christian confuses me to no end. Like Dolly Madison said, was it Dolly Madison or Adams? I think it was Adams' wife. Samuel Adams' wife, who said, how can you be a patriot and not be a Christian? I mean, it doesn't make sense to me. And this nation is just that way. I do have some good news. Oh, people are asking about my foot. Let me just get that out of the way. I need some more water, by the way, please. Can somebody get me a bottle of water?
You don't want a Samuel Adams.
Yeah, I need a Samuel Adams beer. No, I don't drink beer. And there's nothing wrong with drinking beer, don't get me wrong. I have nothing wrong
especially
with people.
Samuel Adams.
Especially if you're going to drink beer, drink Samuel Adams.
I don't often drink beer, no, but when I do, it is Samuel Adams.
You said it wrong.
I'm the most interesting man in America.
Samuel Adams.
Samuel Adams.
Oh, boy. But I on my foot. Okay, I went to the VA on Friday. No, I didn't. I went to the VA on Saturday. And they did an x-ray, and the x-ray, because it's so swollen, it was just foggy, and they go, the tendon was just huge, there's nothing we can do about it. And I'm sitting there feeling bad for myself where they're going to pick out my ski boot that I'm wearing right now. That's my ski boot banging on the floor. And I'm sitting in this, well, what was that? Somebody's phone. Walk away. Do you have your phone on, in your pocket?
Yeah, it's in my pocket.
Yeah, it blasted me. The FBI is using your phone as a signaling device.
Sorry.
That's okay. I don't mind if they listen. They need it more than most people do.
Yeah, they need to know.
And I'm sitting in there feeling bad for myself. Now I can't go to Arizona. Now I can't. We're moving to another dwelling that's much more comfortable and much more family oriented.
Looking at a slideshow of Arizona.
Yeah, I was looking at my pictures of Arizona going, man, this sucks. You know, man, poor pitiful me. And the guy, you know how emergency rooms are? The guy, I'm looking right at him across from where I am, you know, with my piddly little ankle problem, goes into full arrest and begins to die. You know, it looks like he was probably Korea or World War II veteran. They come in, they bring him back, and when he's back, they asked him, they said, look, none of your loved ones are here. We need to know what your advanced directives are. And this old guy, even if he spoke good English, I don't think he would have understood the state that he was in. They go, if you die again, do you want us to revive you? And he says, just long enough until my wife and kids get here. He goes, do you want us to use medicine machines to keep you alive? And he goes, just long enough until my family gets here. And, of course, the bureaucracy of the VA can't comprehend what that means. You know, oh, do we unplug you as soon as they get here? So they said, well, where is your wife? And he said, well, because I'm dying, I sent them to the bank to get all of my money out and cash my VA and Social Security checks so the government won't freeze the accounts and my wife won't have money.
That's
what state of control do we live in where a man on his deathbed, and I believe this guy was incredibly righteous and made me feel like a puke for complaining about having a torn ligament, given what he's probably already sacrificed for this nation, and his first concern is to take care of his wife, because not because, you know, the enemy's there or, you know, there's something going, because the evil government that he served is going to take their money away because he probably didn't have a will or something. He didn't seem very sophisticated. I don't think he understood it, but he was smart enough to know to send his loved ones. Because I saw the wife and kids leaving. I was like, why are they leaving him? And he's, you know, this guy. When they brought him in, I was being triaged. You know, the nurse was asked, you know, taking my temperature and all that. And I heard that typical gurgle when somebody comes in full arrest. And it was him, and they got him back once before. And so we stopped. We prayed for him. I couldn't invade, but the guy was in pain. I mean, they were running catheters, and I don't know if they were sawing one of his limbs off, but the guy was just screaming. Whatever was going on, it was in a lot of pain. And there were two about 30-year-old male doctors that were like, it was like they were ordering their lunch. So what you're saying is, if you go into full arrest, you want us to go ahead and use defibrillators and adrenaline. And he's like, yes, yes, just keep me alive until my wife comes back from the bank. And they're like, okay. So then they come out and they close the curtain and they're like, okay, well, we got to clear some beds in here. What's next? They didn't even, no compassion, no concern, you know. And you're probably saying, well, how dare Dutch knock the VA? He's getting free medical care. I earned it. I didn't get free nothing. The time I served and the things I did, it was a guarantee going in. It was not, maybe if. It was a condition of employment. So it was a benefit. I took grossly low pay for 7 years of active duty and the National Guard, you know, so that I knew later I would have these things. And it's just disgusting to see the jurisdictional overreaching. I went from that, and then the church the next day gave me some hope, but it was right there in my face. This man on his deathbed had to send his loved ones away to secure his possessions because the state, I mean the state, the federal government, were going to seize them. He had to exert his last energies to send his loved ones away. What is wrong with this nation? And I shared that at church, and my pastor told me the same exact thing that he had encountered when he was a younger man in his 20s, and this veteran was dying. And he said, you know, hey, before I die, go to my house and get these things because, you know, I know the government's going to go through there. And they said, no, we'll go tomorrow. They went the next day after the man died because they didn't feel right about it. And when they got there, there were federal agents looking through it. And what they found out is that he had been living on federal funding in a federal-funded dwelling, and they were looking to see if he had stashed any money. They tore his apartment apart. There was nothing of value left. These thugs that worked for the federal government went in there and trashed it. So
they have no...
It's just sad. It's sad.
No compassion for life.
Olima says, we are not a civil law nation, exactly. We have jurisdiction over ourselves, not government over us. That's the common law. It's all going to come down to the law of physics, says Warland. Yeah. Plus P, terminal ballistics, those kind of things. And these are just more things that make me... And I'm not saying I'm giving up on a civil, nonviolent way of restoring our liberties. I just don't believe they're going to let us. Do you really think the New World Order, and specifically the scumbags at the county level who have been moving from elected official position to elected their whole lives, never had a real job, are going to allow you to vote them out? Their largesse that they've stolen from you over the years, they're going to, because once they're out, the next guy's going to uncover all of the criminal activity that these even county officials have done. Trust me, I'm seeing it right here in our own county. They don't want out. Their very livelihood, if not their lives, their freedom, because they'll go to prison if the system's still just, if they get out of office. None of these people want to get out of office. Mm-mm. I mean, look at Byrd. They just put Byrd to rest, the Grand Wizard of the KKK from West Virginia, longest seated senator in U.S. history. What is wrong with that?
The Byrd.
But we should have. Oh man, on the day that he died, we should have played Surfing Byrd. Because they still got the flags at half mast for that guy, and all the Democrats are showing up. You know, they hated him.
Yeah.
I mean, he did a lot of good things, but I'm not going to excuse the bad things he did just because he did some good things. And I don't expect you to do that about me when I die. Not that you guys will know about it, because you know the. It was like, hey, where'd Dutch go? And then, you know, it's not like anybody's going to lower their flag at half mast for me. But
I wouldn't.
When we... Hey, I got a cane now, buddy.
And I'm over
with the
here.
Hook on.
Yeah, and it'll reach you right on that head-butting cushion you call your forehead.
No,
is that swollen now? It's a little swollen right betwixt your eyeballs. Look at that, Stace. Look at your mom.
Let me see.
Look. See the little bump there? I hope he gets an egg. Gigantic egg.
Oh,
and I'll draw on it. when he goes to sleep tonight. So that was our weekend. That was the sermon, Liberty and Jurisdiction, and I'm going to continue to talk about that. The next hour, I was going to talk all about the operation and promotion and all that. We'll talk a little bit about it when we first get going, so I don't want you to turn it off because you're like, oh, he already talked about this. No, and we're going to continue to talk about the theme of the sermon and the parallels between Nazi Germany, 1930s, and the United States today. The whole attitude that they own our children. The whole attitude that they control every service in our lives. Every aspect of our lives, if you choose to participate, is now controlled by at least the federal government. And we're going to talk about that. And, of course, we do have the... we do have the... No, I don't got a knot on my head. My head's built for headbutting. I've been doing it... I used to be a little punk rocker. I used to knock people off the stage with my forehead. So, yeah, I don't have a knot on my head. But I forgot where I was going with that. I had a flashback. But we're seeing history repeating itself with new twists. New twists, new angles. And we'll talk about a lot of different things, but I want you to call in on the next hour. We're winding down here. We've got about 8 minutes to go. Remember, it's 559-561-8225. 559-561-8225. If you've been to the border, tell border stories. If you know somebody that's been to the border, get them to call up. I don't want to hear hearsay. I like first-person stuff. I try to stay away from that unless, you know, I can really 100%, unless you've already known the person, he's already a friend of the show. That type of thing. Now, one thing that we're doing right now is we are moving about 300 feet to the, what is that, south? Into an actual apartment. I'd say house, but it's kind of an apartment. But there's nobody living below us, although we are reserving it for Rocky. I hope he likes spiders and mice. But we're going to be living in the top floor of a structure, and we're going to be moving across the street. And here's something weird for you to think about. I have not lived in a house in over 5.5 years. Since my wife of that period, I keep saying ex-wife, whatever, the woman that I was cohabitating with changed the locks when I came back from a hunting trip. I have not lived in a house. I've rented rooms. I've been in hotels. Right now I'm in a, I don't know what this is. I think this used to be the garage, but now it's a library.
Living in the bean cherry stand.
And... I just haven't lived in a house, and I'm not ready for it. I'm kind of freaking out a little bit. And it's like we were over there today eating in there, and I'm like, wow, this is, you know, I'm starting to get used to it. We don't have any furniture. We don't have any furniture. We're going to have to – I'm going to make furniture out of milk crates, cinder blocks, and whatever wood I find along the road, and maybe whittle up some trees or something. But it's a strange feeling for me to have hot water. I stood in front of that stove over there in the kitchen today, and I couldn't bring myself to cook on it. I said, I go, Lou, go get our electric skillet, our hot plate. I can't. And it's an electric stove. It's the same thing. And I'm just like, I can't. It's weird for me
to
have a stove.
Skillet better.
Yeah, see, Stacy likes the electric skillet. But the other thing that was weird is it's got a swamp cooler. And I know a lot of people poo-poo swamp coolers.
Oh,
but when you've lived in the California heat for 5.5 summers, and you couldn't just push a button, because I don't even have cars that have air conditioning. Till now. We got one that has air conditioning now, but it's just weird. Direct them to... Find that Zazzle link again, Lou, for him, for the t-shirts. And maybe we need to design some good Dutch Jones t-shirts. But it was weird to be able to cool down the inside of the house. Right now I'm sitting in front of a fan that's about 8 feet away, 10 feet away, and I'm sweating like a dog again, and I'm like, it was nice over there.
It's making you weak.
The things are different, because here at the library, Lou says it's going to make me weak. Here at the library, the doors are big glass doors, like in a civil building.
People.
Yeah, Lou called it the full-size peephole. There's no security in this building, but there are multiple entrances. There are books that stop ammunition, you know what I mean? There are little catacombs that we could hide in. Over there, it's a house with one doorway in, and it's on a second story on a hillside. So, like Lou says, I'll jump out the window. I go, Lou, look out your back bedroom window where you're going to be sleeping. It's like 18 to 20 feet off the ground. Because of the way the slope of the hill is. I said, we'll just...
Have a slide.
I said, well, you're hanging out. Well, you jump out the window and you're screaming on the ground. They'll go looking at you. We'll go out the front door. It's going to change everything tactically and defensive-wise that we're going to do. But I am going to get to apply a lot of the things that I've been wanting to try. So what I'm going to do is we're going to videotape them as we do them and put them up on the on the website, like how to strengthen a door jamb, because the door jambs in there are old, but all the front door opens out, and it's on a little small recessed porch, so strategically that's going to be pretty good. Tactically, I mean, not strategically. It's got a flat slope roof, which is bad because they'll jump on, cut a hole in your roof, and drop in incendiaries and burn us out. So I said today, we're eating hamburgers. I go, you know, I mean, we can defend this. It's a little easier to defend it, but they're probably just going to burn us out. So I've got to dig a tunnel. I've got to make a trap door somewhere. I'm going to be doing a lot of that kind of stuff to, you know, escape tunnels and things. But I injured my leg. I can't even move into the house now that it's available. So we're going to be living out of lawn chairs until my foot heals. Because the three of us would have been able to do it, but no way, two people. We can't get our beds in there. What's the only other big thing we have other than the beds? The TV's pretty big, but we can put that on. We're not moving the refrigerator or the freezer. There's a refrigerator and a freezer already in there. We'll just let the next people have this one.
Depends on if that one...
If it's upstairs, it's going to be hotter. I hope... We're not in a hot streak right now, Olima, but it cooled it down over there today just when we were over there eating. And the people that lived there before us said they ran the swamp cooler all the time in the heat, and their electric bill was a third what it is here in this building. So we're looking forward to that. Of course, we won't have giant radio transmitters cranking out the sermons. So,
yeah.
So you know, a big. So that's going to help over there too. But yeah, it's just I haven't lived in a house. It has a phone line, but it's not on. I don't even remember how to get a phone turned on. Does that sound stupid?
Yeah.
Yeah, I need help moving, but most of my listeners are too far away. So. And I don't want to ask anybody who always comes up here and does stuff anyway, so
oh,
I feel bad doing that.
That's okay, we can do it.
Yeah, we'll move. We'll just tie ropes around everything and drag it out. I'll hook it to the Suzuki 4x4 and do that. But it's just weird, and I'm sharing it with you because I'm not trying to chide people who have the luxury of living in a house. I'm not doing that.
Damn.
Until you've lost everything, I've lost it two or three times, and we just had another brother who just lost everything, and I'm not going to talk about it because we're still dealing with some problems security-wise. But you don't know what it's like until you've lost everything. And that slow restoration period, and a lot of it's because I've been lazy and stupid and slow and making bad mistakes. I'm not gonna, it's, oh, poor me. Walking in that house today and knowing that it was ours, you know, and we got to be able to pay for it and all that kind of stuff, is weird to me. It's completely weird to me, and I've been living on the road for so long in a car or doing those kind of things. It's weird. And I'd like to talk about that. If you've had the similar experience, you've been burned out, put out, lost your job, I want to talk about that mindset. How has it made you better? We'll talk about that in the next hour. If you don't want to talk about it, you're going to hear my stories. So we'll be back after the break. We're going to be on Liberty Tree Radio today, Monday, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll be on Liberty Tree Radio. Come on, call in. Let's show off. Let's show them what we got. We'll be back after a song and an intro or something. I don't know. Yeah. Okay, be back later.
Rock's home of the feather and the bear and the fox fur, swat man of the Cumberland Gap, the Dr. Walker and English chap.
Lay down, boy, gonna take a little nap. Lay down, boy, gonna take a little nap. Lay down, boy, gonna take a little nap.
Gonna raise hell in the Cumberland Gap. Pinnacle Rock, he killed a bear with an old flintlock. Cumberland Gap is a fearsome place. The shells go off right in your face.
Lay down, boys, gonna take a little nap. Lay down, boys, gonna take a little nap. Lay down, boys, gonna take a little nap. Gonna raise hell on the Cumberland Gap.
In September of 62, Morgan Shankies all withdrew. Kirby Smith and his rebel band, he run George Warner back to Yankee land.
Lay down, boys, gonna take a little nap. 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 Gonna raise hell up the Cumberland Gap.
Well, as I was saying, I wouldn't worry nearly as much about the atom bomb if it were to kill you right out. What scares me is that awful gas that deforms you.
Yeah. That would be bad.
Yeah.
There is rebellion in the wind.
A new world order. A new world order.
How can you have a house without a gun?
Guns are toys. They're for family protection, hunting dangerous or delicious animals, keeping the King of England out of your face.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. Is the problem.
Here's a hint for you geniuses out there.
It's
all for nothing if you don't have freedom.
It's all that cheese they eat. Seems like every other day somebody's rolling a 50-pound cheese wheel in.
Put out all points, bulletin. We'll set up roadblocks everywhere.
A new world order. A new world order. A new
attention.
World order. A new world
order. Attention.
Government is
an emergency. Repeat. An emergency.
I'm not going to stand for this. I'm going to call the newspapers, the TV stations, the gas stations, everybody.
Heavens, what kind of radio show is this?
Sit back down and shut your trap. It's time for
Dutch Jones.
Radio program.
And now for something completely different.
Woo, we're back. Okay, what's yours? You're this one? Is that you, Lou?
Yeah.
Welcome to the Dutch Jones radio program, and welcome to our Liberty Tree radio listeners. We just switched over, and we are now simulcasting off of DutchJones.tk through UBroadcast. And now we're on Liberty Tree Radio and all of their wonderful outlets. And so we've more than advanced our reach of the Dutch Jones radio program. We are a Christian militant show. We come to you Monday through Friday when we can, except Tuesdays on Liberty Tree Radio. And we try to do as much as we can to remind people of the Christian militant worldview that made this nation once great. We poke fun at the enemy. We point at the enemy. We do it in a little more lighthearted way than most. But sometimes we get a little serious. It generates a lot of email. I really enjoy it. The email, if you want to tell me I'm terrible or tell me, you know, hey, you got this wrong, you got that wrong, I love. If I may say something wrong, especially scripturally, or, you know, if we can have differences, that's different. But yeah, I don't mind that. But if I get something wrong, like give a verse wrong, or I think it was, where was it? Was it Friday? I think I said that the Constitution, the Declaration was a perfect document, and Ed was in the chat room and corrected me. I love it when that happens, because I misspeak. I'm human. I make mistakes. It is not a perfect document. So the email is DutchJonesShow@yahoo.com. That's DutchJonesShow@yahoo.com. Now, you can also find us by going to DutchJones.tk. That's DutchJones.tk, as in Tumor Kid, Ted Kennedy. He's gone now. I didn't pick TK. It's just a free domain site. I think it's some island out in the Pacific that doesn't even have a runway. You have to like row to it for like 14 hours from the nearest island. But that's us there. There's also a forum on that page you can go to. Now, that's just started up. We're going to start putting articles in there, things I'm going to talk about. You can put whatever you want in it. You guys can, if you want to swap stuff, you want to hook up and go to the border, do any of that kind of stuff in there, that's fine with me. The forum is for the listeners. Everybody keeps saying, we need a way that we can get together, because there's little enclaves of listeners around the country. There's a few guys in Pennsylvania we're finding out. So that's where you go. You go there and just sign in and just say, hey, you know, I'm a listener of Dutch Jones. I never sign in. I'm always guest, but, you know, I live in this area and I'm looking for other like-minded people. And that's what that forum is for. Let's see, what else? The post office box we shut down. It got too much attention. They didn't like the fact that it just said DJ on the card. I talked to them on the phone, and they're like, yeah, there's no, like, you didn't show an ID or anything? No, I just walked in and paid my money down. I've been doing it for 5 years, 4 years. And they're like, well, you got to come in. You can't use that post office box. They've been holding back our mail. We didn't know why. Stacy went down there and got her check and stuff, but we're going to open up a new post office box. We're just going to find a business or something somewhere. Unfortunately, it was convenient. It was, you know, a quarter mile away. It's a historic post office. But the man is just hassling us, so we're not going to use it anymore, and that's what they want to do. We need unmentioned prayers for one of our members up here. I'll just give his first name, Frank. Frank is in the clutches of the beast right now on trumped-up stuff, if you get my meaning. And he's being targeted just because of who he is and what he speaks out against. And we pray that he you know, a miraculous recovery, and that our enemies be blinded, and that the way in which they obtained control of his person will be brought out in court, and just be praying for that. We know that they're listening to the show, just because of some of the intel that comes back to us from people we have on their side. So we don't want to give out too much of what, you know, what's going on, but we're going to pray for Frank. He's a man behind the wire, and we don't know how long he's going to be there. And it was just another example of the stupidity of it. And when I get permission from him and his camp to discuss it more, and we can maybe contact him and get him on the phone, we'll talk about it. It's another one of those kicks in the head, you know, where they just outright lie, basically write a warrant at the door and then deny it kind of thing. And he's a patriot. We need to do what we can do prayer-wise for him. So just pray for Frank. God knows what is needed, and just pray for blinding of the enemies. And that's going on there. We had a sermon over the weekend for July. It was July 4th Sunday. And so the pastor here at the Church at Cahuilla, Warren Mark Campbell, gave a patriotic presentation. We had like 50 people in the church. It was really kind of nice. And people brought, you know, relatives, people you don't see year-round. They come on the holidays kind of thing. That was kind of nice. But the cool thing was is that we had the honor that Liberty Tree Radio asked us if they could simulcast it. Which was, you got food on your face, man. I don't know what you just ate, but it's all over your face, Luke.
I didn't eat anything.
Well, then that's scary. I don't know what that was then. But basically all we had to do was elevate the Wi-Fi antenna about 6 feet off the ground, and we got four bars in the church, and we just telecast. No, it's not telecast. We simulcast the audio right off of our mixing board, which is basically a little Radio Shack $24 microphone mixer. It's a joke. It's funny, I got some feedback. Hey, the bass is too much. I'm like, all I can do is turn it up and down. We are not that technical here. But it was a historical first. It was the first time that we've done that. Now, we have sent stuff out over our FM side. Ed says, anytime it was cool, we had fun rebroadcasting that. And it was a church sermon. Thank you, Ed. The pastor loved it. He gets a smile on his face knowing that people all over the country and not the world were listening through Liberty Tree Radio and all its many outlets. It was a great chance to do it, and I've been telling him for like 3 years we should do this every Sunday. And now that we know how easy it is, it literally took 20 minutes to set up. Mm-hmm. I thought it was going to be a nightmare running audio cables. I said, let's try the easiest thing first. Let's just raise the Wi-Fi antenna and see if we get a better signal. We had to open the windows in the chapel so that the signal would go through. With the windows closed, we only got two bars, and when we opened it, we got four. And we had no dropouts. Talk about divine intervention. You know, you guys know who listen to this show. We have all kinds of problems, you know, with UBroadcast, and we're switching over to Ustream as soon as we're done, because we paid for UBroadcast for a few days, for a month, and we don't want to waste that money. So we're going to switch over to Ustream and use their free process as soon as that's done. It'll be easier for Ed and everybody concerned. But no problems. Everybody said it sounded great. People were in the chat room were even taking part in the question and answers the pastor was putting out. You know, it was kind of a little embarrassing when people in the chapel didn't remember Jonas Clark at first, you know, the pastor at Lexington Green.
You were looking it up.
I didn't look it up. I almost did. I'm like, I know this. And I'm like, Jonas, I couldn't remember. I always forget it. And, you know, that was excellent. Talking about the responsibility of the church to resist tyranny. And that's kind of where I want to go today, because that flowed into just a thought I was having, and then you know, the Lord kind of gives me these shows. I've got an easy job here sometimes. Other times I have to really fight for topics, and you know, and you have to go through the media. But I had that sermon on Sunday, and then today while we were eating our afternoon meal, I was listening to Coral Ridge Church, and they had two people on there talking about a study that they did comparing the United States today with Nazi Germany in the 1930s and the buildup of the Fabian socialist fascist state there. And I'm gonna go to their website, and they've got a book out, you know, and everything about it. But it was amazing to me. The same steps are being taken today, and guess what? The church and the patriots are ignoring it again. Not everybody. I mean, not everybody. There's a percentage, and people throw out the 3% number, or whatever. I honestly don't know what it is. Everybody I know knows what's going on, with the exception of my family and in-laws. And even the in-laws are starting to go, hey, wait a minute, you know, we kind of listened to your show. What was that? Unfortunately, my family, you know, my dad just knows it's bad. And my brothers are oblivious, you know. But the churches back then, Hitler was genius. And I know people hate it when I say that. He took the churches out with a simple blow. He went after their greed. He basically said, I'm going to let you guys do whatever you want to do. Just stay out of the ballot box. He lied to him. He made verbal promises to him. It was about one-third Catholic, two-thirds Protestant, and then, you know, whatever else you want to add in there. Of course, we know what he did to the Jewish folks, gypsies and everybody else. You know, just argue about the numbers. I'm not a Holocaust denier. I'm just not a Holocaust exaggerator. Let's put it that way. So let the hate mail come.
10 billion Jews were murdered.
Yeah, 10 billion Jews were murdered. No, but I guess once you get past that first million, what's a few million between genocidal maniacs,
yeah.
Pol Pot, whatever. But the churches, in their greed to have power and to have jurisdiction, let Hitler do what he did because they believed the lie. And we saw it under Bush, faith-based initiatives, right? Oh, we're going to give you all this federal money and help you out. And then everybody bid on that wasn't very smart. The elders and stuff did that. Same thing happened in Germany. Said, you deal with the spiritual issues, we'll deal with the political issues. And 90% of the pastors went along with it. Now, there were some great pastors that didn't, and they ended up on meat hooks or hung by piano wire, right? There were some great pastors, Lutheran and Catholic, that did fight. The Catholics tended to go along, though. I'll have a guest on to talk about that, because I don't always understand that. So it's a strange and weird thing. But the next thing that was is that they outlawed homeschooling. Now, I know what you're saying. They haven't outlawed homeschooling in America. Not on the federal level, but they're doing everything they can to discourage it. California
came
real close. Because we homeschool, we're a pro-homeschool church. They tried to pass a law here saying that you had to have a teaching certificate and degree to teach your kid at home. And it failed. It failed in the 19th District Court. It didn't make it all the way to the federal Supreme Court. So it was kind of weird. We had a liberal court out here because we got a bunch of hippies on the court actually come in favor of a conservative issue. I don't know why. Maybe God blinded them or something. But the homeschooling back then, Hitler said this. Hitler said, the parent's responsibility is to feed the body, clothe the body, house the body of the child. It is the state's responsibility to control their soul. He didn't even say church. He said, the state of Germany will control the souls of the children. And he said, if I can grab them in the schoolroom today, we will own them in the streets tomorrow, and they will put forth the agenda of the Third Reich. It's amazing to me that people don't see this today.
No,
Germany's come full circle. They banned homeschooling in Germany again. They just put two parents in school for 9 months each for schooling their child at home. Took the child away.
Do you think they're going to go back to Hitler?
No, I don't think they'll go back to Hitler, but they'll go back to some other kind of socialism. And it's never the same exact thing twice. It's a good question, Stacey. There won't be another Stalin. There won't be another Hitler. There'll be a new Obongo. There'll be a new name we've never heard of. You know, it'll be somebody that we've never even thought of that will come up and rise to power. But they will do this. The end result will be the same. A boot on everybody's neck, tyranny, control, control, control. The difference is the technology today, and I'm not excusing the German people for playing along with what they did in a lot of this. We have the knowledge. It's not that long ago. There are people alive that can tell you what happened. It's not like it was 700 years since the last great tyranny went across the land. No, it's only a few decades, especially if you live in Bosnia or Serbia. So in America, it's happening again. The mega churches, the seeker-friendly churches. Somebody sent me an email. What do you mean seeker-friendly? The churches that are more worried about keeping the pulpits full than telling the full gospel of Jesus Christ.
That and offending people.
They don't want to offend anyone. They want to tickle your ears, feed you sweet milk and cookies, and not give you any meat that you have to chew on and spit the bones out of.
Yeah.
These are all theological terms that I hope you understand. They want to have all these programs. They want to have all these projects so that they can keep you busy and interested in the church. Warland says California got rid of homeschooling a long time ago. Nope, we're still hanging on. In fact, it's increasing. And that really hurts the public schools because they lose that bounty on the head of each child that they get from federal, state, and county funds. We have huge coalitions up here. There's different organizations. We stick, of course, with the Christian ones. Our church is an ecclesiastical school. We used to have K through 12 here when the population was higher. Our principal is the pastor. So when Lou, he's going to take his final exams, he's going to get a diploma from the Church at Cahuilla Ecclesiastical School. And the pastor will test him. In fact, the pastor frequently comes up to the parents that are homeschooling and says, are you covering this? Are you covering that? Because he knows what's on the test for the state. And it's not a GED. It's not a general educational equivalency diploma. It's actually a diploma, and he'll have it. And Luke, and after that, it's up to him if he wants to pursue secular college or anything. So we still have it. But the churches are stepping aside in this. More and more Christian schools are closing down because of overregulation, permits. I mean, everything from, and I'm not, to how many fire alarms they have, to the width of their doorways, to the sanitation in their kitchens. They are just going after schools. Now, in all fairness, they're going after the Muslim madrasas here, too. They have Muslim schools here in Tulare and Kings County and Fresno County, and they shut down a bunch. And what was weird is when it came out that these Muslim schools were there, they were getting $2 to $3 million a year from the State Department of Education to run these Muslim religion schools. And what shut them down was the discipline. They were getting complaints about discipline, like standing on the kids' backs and making them do push-ups and stuff. I don't, Muslim thing aside, I don't, if the, that's what the kid needs, I mean, I have no problem with that. I've heard stories here about the high school, because it was years ago, it was before I was here, that if the parent wouldn't allow the teachers to punish the children, then they had to come in. So, like, say, let's say Lou was in, you know, the ninth grade, tenth grade, whatever he would be in, and, you know, he just hauls off and stabs a kid with his pencil. And that requires corporal punishment because he harmed another child. You know, granted, he'd probably get him expelled. But you, if I wouldn't allow the pastor or a teacher to do that, I have to come in and swat him in front of him. So we have really harsh anti-corporal punishment laws here in California. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's another nanny state thing. I have been in a bike store, spanked my daughter when she was two or three, two swats on a diapered bottom. For about the fifth time, she picked up a pigeon feather off the floor and stuck it in her mouth. Yeah. I mean, you might as well have her sucking on a rat butt. Well, and so I swatted her on the butt, and all of a sudden, this hippie in a sundress, a lady, she looked like she was 60, but she could have been 30, you know how they look, comes over with this big floppy hat, and she gets in my face with her finger and goes, "Don't you touch that child again!" And I get right in her face, and just in my best Clint Eastwood, you know, low drawl, I said, "Get out of my face or I'm going to beat you. Don't you dare tell me how to raise my child." She gives me all the, and flitters out of the store. About 10 minutes later, here comes a LAPD motorcycle cop, 6'2", black guy, you know, the leather, he gets off. He's walking around the bike store like he's looking to buy a bike. I know immediately what happened. You know, Susie Hippie went out and got this guy. So I go, "Anthea, I go over and ask that policeman for a sticker," because in L.A. they carry stickers for kids, and they give them little, like, deputy dog stickers or something. She goes over, and, you know, she waddles over to him, and she goes, "Hello, hello," and he starts talking to her, and she starts saying, "Sticker, sticker, sticker." So he pulls out of his pocket this gold badge and sticks it on her little T-shirt, and I go, "You're here because I threatened a hippie, aren't you?" And he kind of looks around and goes, "Yeah." I go, "Well, what do you think? Do I look like I'm abusing my child?" And he goes, "No." And he goes, "Well, what happened?" And I told him, and he just kind of shook his head. I said, "Why do you have to show up for that?" He goes, "It's state law. It's against the law to spank your kids in public." I was like, "What?" And he says, "Yeah, you can't spank your kids in public, you know, aggressively." I go, "I did this." And I went to, you know, I said, "I can show you what I did." He's like, no, that's fine, that's fine." And I said, "Anybody in here offended when I spanked my child?" And nobody said anything. The clerks kind of laughed, and that was it. And that's what we're living in California. So when you guys make fun of us in California because that happens, we're fighting it so it doesn't spread to your neighborhood. And that's not the first time that's happened. I've had times when my daughter was older and I've spanked her. And I've had people come up. And I handled it a little less violent, but let them know that they were crossing a line. But in the other side of it, I remember one time I saw this Arab, and it's not because he was Arab, you know, it sounds like I'm, today's the theme, Arabs. I saw an Arab guy wailing on his daughter, I mean punching her, like a 6-7-year-old daughter. And I went over and grabbed his arms and detained him, said I was placing him under citizen's arrest for child abuse. Police came and took him away. I never got to testify because he left the country. There's a time when a Christian man has to stand up in that way, too. You know, you don't punch a 6-7-year-old daughter.
Well, no.
I wouldn't even punch my son with full force in the face unless he was trying to stab me again.
Or we're sparring.
Yeah, well, when we're spying, we spa. We spa, for those of you on the East Coast, we spa. But yeah, when we're working out martial arts stuff, you know, I always tell him, he's always like, how hard was that? I go, that was 30%. I go, you want 50? He's like, no. But it's just, there's a difference, and there's operating procedures. But here in California, it's gone nuts.
Yeah.
It's completely gone nuts. Kids are taken out of homes here, and the state takes them over, and the kids die. They're in worse situations than they ever were in their regular homes.
Right.
And in Nazi Germany, that's what they did. They took over the leadership of the children, the responsibility of raising the children. A lot of Germans want it because why? They were in the worst depression the world had ever seen. You know the stories about a wheelbarrow full of bread, of Weimar Republic Deutschmarks to buy a loaf of bread. Mm-hmm. You know, it would be better to use their money for kindling than to actually try and buy anything with it. People were burning it. We're headed that same way. Now it's not that bad. I know it's not that bad. There's old guys listening right now. Oh, this young whippersnapper doesn't know what he's talking about. I went through the Great Depression and I had to eat peanut butter on my shoes.
I was in the Civil War
and things were bad. But no. That's not what I'm talking about. But the signs are there. The parallels are easily drawn.
The signs are there.
You know, you got Hillary Clinton. It takes a village. It takes a village to steal the mind of your child is what that book should have been. You know?
Child,
that's what she said. You probably don't remember that. You weren't really paying attention back then. But yeah, she came out with a book saying that it takes a whole village. That's a socialist view.
I guess she's the village idiot.
It takes two parents to raise
Yeah, it takes two parents. Sometimes one parent, depending on the situation. It's a hard job. I respect any man or woman out there that takes the time to raise their kids.
I guess Hillary's the village idiot.
Yeah, Hillary was the village. It takes a village idiot to write a book like that.
Hillary the
Hutt. But it's sad. And nobody is, you know, on a grand scale. You know, we've got Chuck Baldwin. I don't know if you guys on Liberty Tree Radio know about Chuck Baldwin. You probably do. You guys are very versed. I'm not talking about the hosts. I'm talking about the listeners. This guy is just standing in the gap. The Southern Poverty Law Center said he was the biggest danger to America. And he's a pastor that does nothing but preach good, solid gospel. You want to hear him? Come the first weekend in October to the church at Cahuilla. And you'll be able to hear what the few people that are standing in the gap are saying. I'm looking forward to it. But that's what we're talking about here, the parallels that people are ignoring, the nanny state. I'm going to talk a little bit the next half hour about how I think, and this was funny because this ended up, I think it was Saturday, on Facebook. There were some white supremacist folks that were posting stuff about how anyone that's homeless is scum and just should just be allowed to wither away. And I said, well, you know, I was homeless for quite a while. In fact, technically I'm homeless right now because I'm living in a library at a church. And I can tell you that I'm not pathetic. I'm not a waste of time. And I've always been underemployed and made enough money. And
I don't think we're homeless.
I feel homeless. So we moved to the house across the street. But I want to talk about that. I mean, there's got to be more than just me out there. I can tell you that this path that the Lord has put me on has made me a much better person. I had a lot and lost a lot, but I didn't appreciate it when I had it. I was a stupid steward of my belongings. And now I appreciate everything I get. When I trade for something, when somebody donates something, when somebody comes and says, hey, I got three of these, here's one for you and your family, I don't treat it like the garbage that I did, even the stuff I bought when I was getting ready for Y2K. I think learning how to live out of my camper. I had a job. I was a firearms instructor, and I worked as a private investigator. I did all kinds of stuff, you know. And I saved every penny I could, and I just, you know, and I get knocked down again. You know, calamity would hit. I got burned out twice. Burned out twice. Flooded out once. Flash flood. Took everything I owned. And I laughed about it then, and people thought I was nuts. And I'm just like, you know, I just don't know what life's going to give me. As long as I've got clothes on my back, shoes on my feet, and a direction. I don't even have to have anything in my pockets. A direction and a way to go. And because I had Christ in my life since I was 32, it was a little easier. Before that, I was just kind of, I don't know who I was serving. So I don't know. So I want to get your calls, if you would. 559-561-8225. 559-561-8225. I want to hear from people who've lost and have kind of maybe, even if you haven't recovered yet, but what lessons have you learned from it? Because these are the same lessons that are going to apply when the crunch comes, to steal the term from patriots. When this country falls apart, we're all going to be in that boat. And those of us that have been through it once, twice, for me it's three times now, And we're slowly, it's funny, I'm slowly recovering now. I was getting ready to do a bunch of stuff. And then, boom, I get this freak injury in the middle of the night where my muscles cramp and I tear my Achilles tendon and now I can't work. And I got to laugh about it. Because I know tomorrow is another day, just like she said in Gone with the Wind. I'm going to keep moving forward. I'm going to keep serving my Lord and I'm not going to give up. I'm not going to stop fighting. Yeah, Lewis hates peanut butter. Somebody's chatting in there. I don't know what they're talking about. But
I know what they're talking about.
We've been hoarding peanut butter for years, and I'm like, I don't know what you're going to eat. He won't eat beans. He won't eat rice. He won't eat peanut butter.
So
beans, peanut butter, and rice sounds good. We should make an energy bar out of that.
Oh, no, rice.
And then he spells peanut butter, P-N-U-T. I'm talking about how great it is to homeschool you, Lou, and you spell peanut, penna.
Oh, that was a typo.
Yeah, typo.
You're a typo.
Yeah. So that's just the way it works. Where's the taser at?
You don't have one.
I don't know.
Yeah, I do. My flashlight taser, the 100,000 volt one.
It doesn't
work. Oh, yeah, you said it. What'd you do to it?
Yeah,
you know what's coming next, don't you?
No, you should.
As soon as we go to break, you're going to get zapped.
You don't know where it's at.
I'm going to find it. Yeah.
Make one.
That's another thing about being homeless. You never know where all your stuff is because you put it in like containers and stashes and you hide it. When we move into this house across the street, it's going to be the first time in about 5 years that I've been in a house. I've rented rooms. I've rented hotels. I've lived, you know, like right now I live in a library in the janitor's closet that we modified. I want to hear from you guys. Or you're going to hear just from me. We're going to be back after this break, a little commercial about what we do to try and raise money to keep this ministry going.
And a serious offense.
And a serious offense.
It
doesn't make sense. It'll make sense in a while. We'll be back in a little bit. Thanks for listening to the Dutch Jones Radio program on Liberty Tree Radio and the Dutch Jones Radio Network.
Between the two, a father had to choose. 13 stars were placed upon their flag for each southern state. How proud them boys they must have felt as they marched away. But after the battle smoke cleared and they could see all that was done, a prayer went across the old south for all the fallen sons. So for their honor we are sworn that throughout eternity we must never let our children forget the brave boys who wore the grave. There'll be books that'll be written, there'll be stories how they'll be told of the glory of the old self, how she fell from grace. And that cause they'll write about, it was known throughout the ranks. They were fighting for their homes and the love for their state. 13 stars were placed upon their flag for each southern state. Now proud them boys they must have felt as they marched away. But after the battle smoke cleared and they could see all that was done, a prayer went across the old south for all those fallen sons. So for their honor we are sworn that throughout eternity we must never let our children forget the brave boys who wore the grave. Time has healed the pain that our nation felt, but there's still some who won't forgive, there's some that won't forget. You can take away the flag and hide it high on some shelf, but you'll never make us hide the pride we southern people feel. 13 stars were placed upon their flag for each southern state. Now proud them boys they must have felt as they marched away. But after the battle smoke cleared and they could see how all that was done, a prayer went across the old south for all those fallen sons. So for their honor we are sworn that throughout eternity we must
troops. Never let our children forget the brave boys who wore the gray. We must never let our children forget the brave boys who wore the gray.
If all that were proven true, I think that would be a very serious offense. That is not going to be proven true.
Thank you for listening to the Dutch Jones Radio program. And if you get nothing else from our show, there should be two things that you learn. One is, you need to work together with other like-minded people. And number two, you need the basic equipment to keep from becoming a refugee. So whether you're looking for a water filter, tactical gear, surplus gear, or just want to look into some new survival equipment, you need to check out djstore.tk. That's djstore.tk. We carry surplus, and we carry new lines from MilSpec and Voodoo Tactical. And if you don't see it on our website, please send us a message, and we'll find it for you. So if you're going to need the gear anyway, why not buy it from us? You'll get it for cheaper than you will from the source, and it'll help out the ministry here at the Dutch Jones Radio Program. So whether you're new or been in this for a while, check out djstore.tk. That's djstore.tk.
Gun.
Guns aren't toys. They're for family protection, hunting dangerous or delicious animals, keeping the King of England out of your face.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. Is the problem.
Here's a hint for you geniuses out there.
Avenge me!
It's all for nothing if you don't have freedom.
It's all that cheese they eat. Seems like every other day somebody's rolling a 50-pound cheese wheel in.
Put out all points, bulletin. We'll set up roadblocks everywhere.
A new world order. A new world order. A new attention. World order. Attention.
I'm not going to stand for this. I'm going to call the newspapers, the TV stations, the gas stations, everybody.
Heavens, what kind of radio show is this?
Sit back down and shut your trap. It's time for
Dutch Jones. Dutch Jones radio program.
And now for something completely different.
I don't ever want to touch a hippie that. You want to know what I'm talking about? You got to go to the chat room. To get to the chat room, you got to go to DutchJones.tk. I don't know what's going on in the Liberty Tree radio chat room because we don't have enough bandwidth to open up another computer. If we were to open up another computer, we would just die. We would go off. This is the Dutch Jones Radio Program. We are back. This is our final half hour. And before I went to break, I gave out the phone number, 559-561-8225. I'm going to share with you something. I grew up basically living off the land because my stepfather, and he's out there listening. He's probably one of the guests.
Hello, Dad.
He trained me to live off the land. He trained me to always stand your ground when you could, and to hide when it was time to hide. He is a very wise man, and he was basically a modern day poacher, mountain man guy. And we lived as fugitives from time to time, so we were homeless off and on. And I learned through that to appreciate what you got. To be very critical in who you choose to be your friends. I'm not talking about, there's some people that are homeless that will just pick friends that can help them. Unfortunately, through my military and college years, I lost these skills, but I regained them afterwards. I lost my mother, my home, my church, and my dog in the same 30-day period when I came home from a hunting trip after my mother had died, my dog had died, the church had folded, and my ex-wife changed the locks on the house. The $500,000 house that we were living in, because she just didn't feel right anymore being married. Long story short, we both contributed to it. But what I did is I turned right around, took my little pop-up tent trailer, went about 40 miles into national forest land, and started living like a hermit. I had everything in there. You know, I made later trips to get my other car. You know, I had my 4x4, got all my guns, got everything I had. I had over 225 weapons, rifles, guns, nothing exotic. I bought a lot of curio and relics.
We have like 25.
Yeah, I had to stash them all around everywhere, put them at friends' houses. In fact, every once in a while somebody will call me and say, hey, you still got two Mosin-Nagants in my closet and I'm moving. You want them? you know, and had another guy call, hey, you got like a, you know, a couple bolt action rifles, some shotguns. So I try to get around to pick them up, and I say, hey, if you can keep them for a while, use them. If you don't ever see me, use them for the coming crash, you know. I like my friends to be well-armed. But I learned a lot, and that first time, I put everything I had, as much as I could, into a pop-up tent trailer. Then I got a motorhome, took $4,000 cash that I had stashed away for Y2K that the ex-wife didn't know about, and I bought me a motorhome. All set up, got a job as a firearms and safety instructor, range master at a National Forest franchise shooting range. I was making like $8.50 an hour, but I got to live there and do everything. Everything was great. Got to see my daughter. I lived a direct line from my daughter. Well, then we had forest fires, and I lost everything except for a four-wheel drive Suzuki. I got out. I started helping other people get out, pulling their trailers out. I was pulling full-size camper trailers, you know, tongue hitch trailers with my little Suzuki. It was easy to get them going. Stopping was the hard part. And after about the third one, I went to go back. They closed the road, and I couldn't go in. You know, the highway patrol stood there, wouldn't let me in. They shut everything down. And, of course, I lost everything. And what I didn't lose was stolen by looters. So, you know, these stinking highway patrolmen, you know, and here I was, an ex-firefighter, showing them my ID, going, hey, I'm one of you guys. They're like, no, you can't go in. So I lost everything. So then I recover. I buy another tent trailer. I go back. And then because of the forest fire the previous year, that winter we had all, you know, the usual monsoon weather. There were mudslides, and I lost the car and about half my guns that were in the trunk of the car. They actually found it like 7 miles away, all smashed up. And, of course, the guns were missing. They weren't in there. You know, whoever found it took them, liberated them. So I was like, great, this is wonderful. So then I moved to another campground with the camper that I got out with the four-wheel drive. And then another fire took everything, and that was it. Even the Suzuki burned that time. So I basically walked out, went looking for friends. Some of them gave me, you know, a couple days here, a couple days there. The shooting range that I worked at, it wasn't burned out, but because of landslides and stuff, it was pretty much closed for a couple of years, so I didn't have a job anymore. So I started working security. I started doing whatever I could part-time, sleeping in a burned-out Suzuki Samurai. You want something that draws attention? You're driving down the road on a seat that's nothing but springs. The top's gone. The vehicle is charred and beginning to rust. Every cop in the world's pulling you over. Hey, is this thing roadworthy? I go, yeah, it just burned. I replaced what I, you know, hoses and stuff, and it runs. And they just love to hassle you when you're in that. So I was living in campground to campground, Riverside County, you know, stuff like that. Well, then I landed a job, a part-time job here and there doing that. And I was homeless for pretty much 2 years. I'd go to campgrounds and pay the $14 a night, stay there. A couple places let me pay $400 a month if I had some steady work. And you start to learn things. And the biggest thing I learned about being homeless in the L.A. Basin is zombies, monsters, and vampires are real. And they control the nightlife, the night on the streets in that area. Let me clarify that. You've got these zombies, which are the mentally ill, the publicly funded drug addicts, you know, the methadone types. I don't even know what all the drugs are they get now. They're on Social Security. They can't hold jobs because of their drug addictions. They get their $788 a month or whatever. Then they get their drugs from the state, and they're out there roaming around. Now, there are a number that are harmless, but there are a vicious number of them, the ones I call the zombies, that will kill you for anything shiny that they think they can trade for drugs. If you've got like a 1982 Walkman that you got for a dollar at the flea market, they're going to kill you and take it. I had a guy try and kill me with a shovel. I made the mistake of walking through a city park in Riverside at like 2 in the morning, and this guy jumps out behind a dumpster with a shovel. I just hoofed it, just ran away from it. I had, you know, nothing. I didn't walk around with guns or anything. I didn't want to get hassled. Yeah, I didn't watch my Jim Wagner shovel training. So after that, you know, I started to get a little bit smarter again and go, you know, I started to get my street smarts back. So in the next level, the monsters, they're all out there. The pimps, the child molesters, the chicken hawks, whatever you want to call them, that are out there preying on these people are out there. And they will bait you. They will talk nice to you. They'll invite you back to their place for a sandwich, a bowl of soup, and some a warm place to sleep. And they run in two categories. They're faggots who are just looking for an easy pickup for some weird guy on the street because they don't want their wives to know that they're gay, that they're sodomites, or they're actual predators and you could end up dead. And people would just disappear. there's this level that are perpetually homeless by whether choice or imposed homelessness, and they'll in the parks you'll start saying, hey, what happened to so and so, and they all have street names and stuff. Oh, they found her in a dumpster cut into 14 pieces. What happened? Well, some guy picked her up, took her home, and killed her, and they still don't know. Nobody knows where she went. You know, you have these amateur prostitutes. Why anybody would pick up a homeless drug addict prostitute is beyond me. So those are the monsters. And you got these vampires. And I'm talking, you know, I'm not talking literal blood-sucking vampires. But you got these people that appear to be homeless, but they got money. And all they want is they want to suck everything free out of you can. I remember I was in a campsite one time, and there was this couple that pulled in next to me one night. And they had trouble with everything. Their vehicle was running bad. It was all this. And I kind of befriended them a little. I'm helping them out. Doing all this stuff. She worked, and this guy weighed like 500 pounds, couldn't move. I don't know how he got around this little camper. And I started befriending him and helping him and giving him a little bit of money here. Because I was working security guard. I was working all kinds of stuff that I had permits for to do in the state. You know, but nothing full time. People would work you for a week for a function and then drop you. And so I'd have money, so I'd kick them down a little money and everything. Well, then I found out they were doing it to everybody in the park one day. It was kind of one of those things when you sit down and go, yeah, really? You know, they told you that they needed a carburetor, and you gave them the $200, and you gave them $200, and you gave them $200. And these people were like modern-day gypsies. They would move from campground to campground across the country. The wife would get, because I had access to private investigators, so I started running plates and stuff. And these people, that was what they did. They had tons of money. They had lots of money. When they arrested these people for something else unrelated, she was skimming where she was working, embezzling is the word. They came in, and they had like tens of thousands of dollars stored in their vehicle. They had precious gold and silver coins, probably stolen. They had this guy, he loved books. So we'd sit down, and he was a pagan, and I was a Christian at the time, so we would counter and debate, and he was semi-intelligent. And he had all these really awesome books, old, old books. Never occurred to me that he probably stole them from people because they were very valuable books. But there are those kind of vampires out there that will just scam you for everything you have. The most interesting one I met, what?
I thought you meant like those vamp people.
Well, they're these people that want to be vampires that run around.
No,
they're afraid of the homeless, too. They would like, you know... You just say boo and they run off. They're just skinny, pale-faced geeks, you know. They're I don't even know what you would call them. Who drink Kool-Aid. Now, some of them do drink blood, especially in L.A. You get some real freaks in L.A.
Oh, man.
But the area I was in, this is basically what I found. You had the zombies, the monsters, and the vampires. And then you had a whole caliber level of people that were living at Walmart. They were Walmart campers. They would go to the parking lot. They would go to their jobs. They were sub-paid employees of different places working for cash. They travel the country like gypsies. And I'm not talking about the travelers who defraud people. That's different. They move in huge hordes. They're not homeless. They got giant McMansions in the Midwest. I'm talking about people that are just Vietnam veterans, a lot of them. They got a skill. They may have addictions of some kind that they control to a point. You know, functional drug addicts, functional alcoholics. We all know them. They live at Walmart. And that's kind of where I gravitated to once I got another motorhome. And at that point, I was making enough money that I could have lived somewhere. But you know what happened? I got into this thing where I didn't want to be tied down. And by the second year, beginning of the third year, I was like, I love not having to go anywhere. You know, I don't pay utilities. Walmart, the security guards at Walmart loved me because I used to catch people stealing stuff. I used to catch taggers at night. But usually I worked at night as security myself somewhere else. And they'd see me pulling up, getting out, wearing my weapon, my security guard uniform, or a suit if I was doing VIP stuff. And they'd come over and talk to you because these were usually guys that worked for like Securitas or one of the lower agencies that paid like $7.25 an hour. And they go, well, what do you do? Oh, well, I do security at the Grammys. I do security over here. I do this. And they're like, wow. And I'd get them involved. And I started to be a recruiter for our agency, Stewart Investigations. But I was pulling in that sometimes on a good month, I could get $4,500, you know, before taxes and everything. And then I started figuring out, hey, just pay me cash. You know, and I always had this goal that I was gonna get somewhere, I was gonna buy something, and you know, I was gonna be near my daughter. Well, then what disrupted it all is my evil ex-wife took my daughter and moved north about 5 hours to a little Navy base outside of Fresno called Lemoore Naval Air Station, so I couldn't see my daughter every day. So I was at a homeless level, but I liked it. My daughter thought it was fun. She'd go, me and Daddy going car camping. Usually if I had her for extended periods of time, I'd drive into the national parks around there up in Big Bear and stuff, and I'd get the time off, and I'd go to a real park, and we'd really camp. But sometimes we'd go car camping. Of course, her mom is taking notes. Her mom worked for Child Protective Services. So you see what I'm up against, right? But I got in a cycle there where I enjoyed it. It wasn't a hardship anymore. And there's right now, there's a whole layer of people like that out there that nobody talks about. They don't go to the food banks. They don't sell their blood at the blood bank to you know, get drugs. You know, they're not on welfare, but they may be getting a pension of some kind. I meet a lot of vets. See a lot of guys like that living on the border. And they're earning their pensions. Let's put it that way. They haven't stopped working. They're still securing this nation. And that's where I came from. And I put to work all of those skills that my stepfather taught me, living as a fugitive poacher guy, you know, a mountain man moving around. And I don't, those kind of people are going to survive a crash. You know, sure, Walmart won't be there. There'll still be parking lots. A lot of them are armed. A lot of them are just good old people. You know, I don't want to say rednecks. That's not, you know, they haven't earned the right to be called a redneck because some of their lifestyles are not redneck lifestyles. There's nothing weirder than being in a Walmart parking lot and having a guy invite you over filet mignon steaks that he's barbecuing on his little hibachi. And wine. Now, I met a guy like that. This guy was functional homeless, and he repaired elevators in the high rises in LA for really good money. I'm thinking like $60 an hour. He never said, but this guy had a really nice motorhome, a moderately nice vehicle to tow it with, and then he had this little tiny car that he just lived in the parking lots. He'd go work on a project for 6-7 weeks, you know, in a new building or a renovation. And the guy was always sitting out there drinking wine, really well-groomed. You'd look, he never had dirt under his fingernails. That's a culture out there of survivalists that people don't even reach. And it was bizarre to me. And I'd like to, I was thinking about going back because I know all the places down there. I don't know up here where to look. Maybe they don't even have those kind of people up here in the Central Valley. Illegal aliens have driven them off, maybe. But being homeless, there's the view that some people get, you know, dumpster diving, mentally ill, they're walking around saluting, you know, parking meters. They're out there. They are out there. And those are just simply the insane. Those are the people where the legends about werewolves and vampires originally came from. You know, in the Dark Ages, these were the people going around preying upon anybody that was dumb enough to come out after the night watch left. But there's a whole nother layer, and it's getting thicker. You know why? Because people are losing mortgages, people are losing jobs, they're underemployed. You've got white-collar workers who thought they always looked down, they would never even shop in a Walmart, but now they're living out of a van, not down by the river like I used to, but down by the Walmart. They're over there by the lawn and garden center. And I still don't know why Walmart allows it. Individual Walmart stopped. There were several in the L.A. area where they go. They put signs up. Although Walmart has a policy, we do not, you know, we ask that you move on. I went to one Walmart, they even had a plug-in so you could plug in your RVs because they didn't want the generators annoying the neighbors in the apartments around it. They figured it was cheaper for them to do that than hire security because there were people always coming and going at these 24-hour places, so they just let campers stay there. Now, I bet if somebody came in and set up a Hooverville, they'd probably be a little upset. But they don't mind it. And I keep, you know, and from what I'm seeing, not here locally, but I'm running into more people on the internet, people telling me, like, hey, I'm not even one paycheck away. I don't know how I'm paying the rent this month. I talked to somebody, they said, you know, they have a house, they have everything, and they go, but we're out. Unless we start liquidating our possessions, we don't have electricity. That's usually the first thing that goes. And then you'll see an increase in fires. You're going to go, what? Especially in places where it's cold. People will start trying to heat their house that have never known how to heat their house. Their fireplace isn't even the kind that will take wood. It's a natural gas fireplace. So they start stuffing wood in there, and the flume isn't designed, the exhaust isn't designed for wood. They burn down their houses, or they all end up dead from carbon monoxide poisoning. We're going to see more of it. Those are going to be side effects of this kind of thing. People bringing their barbecues in. That's a big thing in L.A.
Oh, yeah.
People bringing generators inside because they're afraid somebody's going to steal them because they're living in a $500,000 house, but their electricity went off. You're going to start to see more of that. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm the only one that's experiencing this. Maybe it's unique to me. Maybe I need to write a book about this, a coffee table book. I'll go around and take pictures of them, make everybody go,
coffee
man.
Tables?
Yeah. No, not coffee tables.
Oh.
The campers, the middle...
I thought you were going to go around.
They're former suburbanite middle class workers that are now living at Walmart.
It could be like
coffee table.
Yeah, well, they're lower middle class. I mean, they're dropping out.
By Dutch.
but there's going to be a lot of them. And I wish there was a way, you know, I don't think they have internet unless Walmart's offering them free Wi-Fi. Back then, I wasn't big on the internet. I would go to restaurants and stuff and use their internet. I didn't worry about it in my little motorhome. I got a friend that just, and I'm not going to use your name. I know you're listening. I don't mean to embarrass you. But he's lost pretty much everything, and he's gone back to live with his mom, and he's older than me. And the next step is, because living at home is intolerable because of siblings, because they've all come back, mm-hmm. is getting his gear and living on the street. You know, when you start thinking about it, man, I'm kicking in $300 a month for this, for rent, living with my parents. You know, here I am 50 years old, I'm living with my parents. You know, I'm paying half the electric bill, the phone bill, the water bill. That would all be mine if I just decided to sleep in a Walmart parking lot and just come over here a couple days a week for shower. You got to be strategic. You know what I did? The first thing I did is I got a membership at 24 Hour Fitness, and I would go there every day. I would get on the treadmill for 25, 30 minutes. I'd use some of the machines. I don't like free weights. And then I'd go shower every day, and it was worth it to me. In fact, they're still mad at me because I don't think I did like a 3-year contract and I left after two, but you start figuring out ways to do that. You know, you've got the idiot homeless, the sick drug addict homeless that just go and urinate at the library, you know, and poop in the bushes. But this higher functioning level, they're out there, folks. And I don't know if they're living paycheck to paycheck still, or they're like the stories I told you where they're hoarding money. But they're like an untapped outreach group, you know, and I don't know, it's not really the point of what I was going to talk about today. I just wanted to know if anybody else had been through this and what kind of skills you had gained, and nobody wants to fess up. I know there's people out there listening. I'm not the only 45-year-old guy that's been kicked out of his house and lost his job and his mom and his dog and his church all in the same month. Come on. What are the odds of it not happening to millions of people every week? You just don't want to talk about it, and there's nothing wrong with that. I'm an open book. I don't go, you know, I'm not worried about that. There isn't a pride issue with me. I've been low and I've been high, you know, in my life. I've made a lot of money. But you know what? I'm happiest right now because I appreciate the things I have because of what God's dragged me through. And yeah, He had to drag me through some of it. Rocky Hill Ranger saying he sees a lot of them hanging out at hospitals. Yeah, because you don't notice people. You know, you can kind of fall asleep in a chair and nobody hassles you in the emergency room kind of thing. I've talked to some super homeless people, you know, the ones that are just homeless and get their government check, their welfare check, their food stamp card, and they tell me stories like that. But you go places now, and they have technology that's counter-bum. Like bus stations and airports now will have benches that you can't lay on. They make them uncomfortable. They have a rigid piece sticking up.
Anti-bum.
Yeah, anti-bum benches. I saw them in Visalia at the bus station down there. They're concrete benches, but they have ribs between each person. Rises up about 2-3 inches, so you can't lay across it. So then the other day, I was down there looking around, I saw a bum who just threw down some cardboard and laid across it and was sleeping right there on it. So they'll find a way around it.
Counter-bum.
Yeah, counter-bum tactics. Bum, you know, anti-bum tactics, counter-bum. But they're not bums out there. The homeless are not bums. They're folks just like you and I. Well, I don't know who you are specifically listening to this. But they're lower middle-class folks that believed the lie, believed the middle class dream, thought that job at the plant would never end. I mean, you hear stuff about, you know, Motor City up there in Michigan, generational job security. Not just you, but your grandpa, you, your children work in that factory, and now nothing. And it's not new. I've seen documentaries, and I'm not talking about the one on Flint from Fatso. I've seen just other documentaries where whole towns have just disappeared. And there is a void filling it, and it's not always illegal aliens. It's the yuppie tech. The yuppie tech are the people that are filling it in. But that's, you know, we've seen that bust once or twice. What's this one? Warland says, Dutch, I was living out of a van on the streets of the City of Industry in Maywood. Yeah, I've been there. That's, yeah. Yeah, I knew there were more people out there doing that. The last job I had before I ended up here, I was a bail enforcement officer, and I had a white van that they assigned to me, and I lived in that van. I rented a room from another investigator, and I just kept my stuff there. I probably, in a year that I worked that job, I didn't sleep more than a dozen nights in that room. I didn't even have a bed. I just had boxes of stuff in a room, and I gave him $400 a month to put it there. because I kind of wanted to help his family out, and I liked the security there. He had grown kids that were college students coming and going, and I trusted them, good Christian family. I need to look them up again. But, yeah, a lot of people living out of vans. There was and the thing that started this is there was an article, and I should have started with it. There's an article of some pro basketball player. They found out he's living in a broken-down Buick somewhere, like in Indianapolis or something. And that's what got me thinking about this, and I got online, and somebody posted something about it, so I started adding, and then these punks came in. These white supremacists are saying, oh, you're a scum, you're any white man that would live in a car, you know, and I'm like, shut up, man, you've probably had everything spoon-fed to you. That's what ended up happening. People who have been spoon-fed are the ones that are going to crash hard. It doesn't mean they won't survive, it doesn't mean they won't bounce back, but they're going to do some pretty ugly stuff. In Porterville at the new Target, there's a sign on a wall that warns people that the shopping carts have a special locking system if they go past some perimeter in the parking lot. Yeah. A lot of places now, because the shopping cart brigades are out there, you make a whole living just running up shopping carts because they have like a $5 reward or whatever on their it's actually more than that. But they have technology put into them. I saw that. There's a Target, I think, in Hanford that if you try to take it off the property, the wheels just lock up.
It shocks you.
That'd be cool. Yeah, I'd like to have that technology. Put it in the car. But the face of America has changed to a point where I don't think it's going to come back. And I think this new class of homeless in the last 2 decades is a sign of that. I was part of it. The grace of God, I was led to a church, to a militia, to a group of people that thought like I did, and they embraced me. And as long as I'm here, I know I will not have needs as long as I work. It's not, you know, I'm not just going to come here and sit on my butt and let people feed me. No. I'm not going to let setbacks like a sliced Achilles tendon for some reason keep me from looking for ways to provide for my family. But I know if it comes to the way that I think it's going to come to, I'm going to be more than prepared to live in a van down by the river. The difference will be is I'll be ready to shoot back now when the zombies come. You've been listening to the Dutch Jones Radio Program. We are a militant Christian radio program, but we need your support. Go to dutchjones.tk. There's a pitch in. I think it's at zero. We got to pay for July now. We can't be on the air without your help. Thank you, and we'll be back tomorrow, and not on Liberty Tree Radio, but we'll be back on Tuesday on Liberty Tree Radio. I know we've already lost them. I think we've already come around. But thanks for listening. Everything you do in the holy cause of liberty, you do it to the best of your ability. And remember, the sword is heavy, the battle is hard, and victory belongs to the Lord alone. And if the Lord is with us, Jesus Christ, who can stand against us? God bless you all.
He's an awesome God, we reign.